Welcome.
ようこそ。
Bienvenue.
आपका स्वागत है.
Bienvenido.
환영합니다.
Welcome.
Welcome to Keep Connected. I'm David Siegel. In today's episode, we're talking to Amani Myers. If you enjoy being motivated, then you are going to enjoy today's podcast. This is someone who went from homelessness to providing legislation around foster care to Congress, who has written an incredible book and is just an exceptional human being. Happy listening, happy motivating. Amani, welcome to Keep Connected.
Thank you so much. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Okay. Now, I feel just so deeply privileged to be able to chat with you. I'm really not just saying, and the reason is that when people have such a challenging kind of childhood, it's absolutely amazing to me when people are able to become the shining lights that you are, your community building, your best-selling book, your day-to-day actions. It's really quite remarkable. And I'm just eager for people to hear your story because it's a very special story that motivates me and I know will motivate others. So, you know, let's just talk about your early days, your childhood, the foster care system, your challenges, the steps you took to overcome it. Let's just go all the way back and then we'll bring ourselves forward to meet up and shut up and write and all the other good stuff we're going to be talking about.
For sure. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I feel extremely privileged to be here. It's something that feels surreal. But, I'm really thankful as I look back. You know, I think that it's important to always think about sort of where you began, because I feel like it has given me an opportunity to finally see that, you know, what the things that I've experienced in a way had a meaning. And so I grew up in the foster care system, but before that, you know, I was born with drugs in my system. I was born heavily addicted to drugs. And so I was actually left in the hospital. And from there, my great aunt heard about my siblings and I and ended up taking us in. And so I lived with her for the first 10 years of my life. And then I was introduced to my mom at the age of 10 and was living with her and my siblings for about 2.5 years. And it was in that experience that I experienced, abuse. I experienced a lot of emotionally unsafety. I felt like I dealt with a lot of confidence issues, a lot of issues around rejection and abandonment. And
that's a complicated time in every person, 12-year-old young lady, just trying to figure out things in life.
Yeah. And so, at the age of 12 is when I actually ended up going into the foster care system. And it wasn't that I just got disconnected from my biological, you know, my mother and my family members, but I was also separated from my siblings. And if we know anybody that out there that has siblings, you know, that's really, really hard. People who've been your protective factors, people who've been your best friends. You know, one of the things that I shared when I was in Atlanta last week was that my siblings is where I first found and experienced love. And so to have that ripped away from me at the age of 12 and not even knowing why you're actually being taken away is really, really hard. And so
Amani, were these older siblings or younger siblings?
So I was in the middle. So I had an older sibling and I had a younger sibling. Mm-hmm. And so we grew up together. And when we got separated, it was actually my little sister that got separated from my brother and I. And then when that happened, I ended up going into care. And then from there, I ended up getting separated from my brother because I ended up moving around. And so those experiences really, at such a young age, you don't really recognize how much that taps into your experience around safety and your experience around trust and your experience around stability. And so when it was time for me to age out, which is at the age of 18, you know, you're either leaving foster care, you're either being reunited, adopted, and none of those things happened for me. And so I abruptly actually aged out of care. You know, I was told that by my social worker that my foster mother was no longer being paid to have me there. And when I went back to the home to pack up my belongings, my things were already packed and they were waiting for me on the porch in black trash bags. And so that's also a level of dignity and inhumaneness that happens. And so that also, again, speaks to the amount of instability that I had growing up throughout my time. And so like when you go into foster care, you're expected to feel safe and be safe and to actually heal. But all of those things are actually re-triggered. So healing for me was more of a lifelong pattern, you know, and experience. So,
I mean, you were incredibly proactive in your healing.
For sure.
It's not as though, quote unquote, lucky things. And of course, everyone has some lucky things happen to them, you know, throughout life, but you made it happen. So share with us a little bit. You're 18, and what did you do? And how did you just take ownership? It feels like that. You just took ownership of your healing, and that's incredibly brave and hard to do. And so few people are able to do it. Please share.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I was very determined from a young age. I knew that I did not want to experience the things that my parents had experienced or the things that they had gone through. And so I knew very early that I wanted to be different. I knew that I wanted to at least have a shot. I just knew that I wasn't sure how I was going to get there. And so it was actually during my senior year of high school, I got caught drawing graffiti on the wall. And I was not on track to graduate. I was not on track to even go to college. And it was in that experience that a new principal found out about me and said, hey, you know, what do you like to do besides drawing graffiti on the wall? It was in that moment that I was introduced to other options that I had no idea about, you know?
Wow, the power of that one person. That's,
yeah.
That's really beautiful. Is. And then you went off to college, and then talk about that a little.
Yeah. I went off to college and was determined to, again, graduate. I wanted to graduate. And of course I had roadblocks while I was in college. And it was there that I ended up becoming homeless my sophomore year. And one of my mentors from college, I had signed up for a mentorship program. Part of the holidays is that young people in foster care can't stay on campus. And so I had nowhere to go. And my school made an exception for me to be able to go with my resident director to her family's house. And it was in that experience that I got sent to a conference so that I wouldn't spend Christmas alone. And it was there that I found that I met another mentor who became a mentor who told me about an internship program for young people who were in the foster care system on Capitol Hill. And she was like, you know, you should go and check it out and you'd be a perfect candidate. And because I was experiencing homelessness, I was like, I really need to figure out what I'm going to do next summer. So I ended up applying sheepishly and I was like, I'm just going to try it. And I got accepted. And it was the first time in my life that I realized that my story could have meaning. I never was in the position to even share all of the things that happened and all the things that I experienced in care in a way that could help change the policy lens. And so I wrote a policy report, and the policy report was focused on how do you train foster parents in trauma-informed care so that when young people age out of care or when they leave their care, they're not being dually traumatized or harmed. And I got to present that report to both members of Congress and the White House Domestic Policy Council. And one of their senators took it up for draft legislation.
And you had been homeless like a year prior.
Yes. Yes. So it was like a full circle. It was like, wow. And the crazy part was I was so upset and I was so annoyed being at that conference because I was like, I really want to be with a family. I don't want to be here. And being there is really what led me to that opportunity.
Right. Man plans and God laughs. And you just don't know.
I know, right?
Amazing things can happen. But you made them happen. And you know, there's something about your resilience, which is just truly remarkable. What is it? It's just your personality? Did you have to work hard at it or it just comes naturally?
For sure. I think that it's a mixture of all of those things. You know, I think that, you know, one of the things that that I learned really early was that I didn't have to allow my past to dictate my future. I was raised by a great aunt who spoke really good life into me and shared with me the importance of being a leader and all of those different things. I also, I think when you spend a lot of time in darkness, you are really always inching to see the light. Mm-hmm. And because I spent so much time in darkness, I was just really, really really determined to see what was on the other side of darkness, and that's light. And for me, I'm really thankful and really grateful that I've had people that have been in my path, that have been placed in my path, strangers that have become family, that have said, you know, Imani, I see something inside of you that I couldn't always see, you know? And I think that that's what it really takes, is that sometimes, I mean, for me, I believe that we're all whole and that we're all born and we're all great. And the problem is that a lot of us are not able to see our greatness. It takes people, it takes community to be able to do that for us.
So well said. And it seems to me, and everything you shared, the power of mentors for you.
Yes.
And now how today you're also mentoring other people, and you continue to be mentored by people and mentor other people. It seems like that's a theme that has woven through, you know, a lot of your experiences. Let's talk about safe spaces, because you referenced that while we were talking originally. So just share with us just thoughts around the challenges of safe spaces. How do you create a safe space? Why safe spaces are so important? I know it's something that you're passionate about.
Yes, for sure. I think that safe spaces is the key for people to not only experience vulnerability, not for them to only experience safety, but it's in those spaces that they're able to transform. And so for me, I find that the challenges with safe space is that sometimes people don't always understand why they are necessary and why they are important. And if they feel left out of that, they then will feel as though that no one else can experience that. And that's not true. I think that everyone deserves to have safe space, and it's how you create that safe space. And it's really by being able to come together to find that objective meaning as to why we're here, why we're supporting each other, and why that is important. And I think that the beauty that I've been able to experience has been that even in the spaces that haven't always been safe or have felt safe, I have been able to create that safe space within other people and with communities. And so for me, I just think that being able to recognize the importance that people deserve to be able to be seen, even in safety, even in security, I think that those are so important. And so I'm here for safe spaces, David.
If you were to give one message to our thousands of listeners around what they can do to create a safe space, what one message would you possibly give them?
The one message that I would give people who are thinking about creating safe spaces is to ask your why, as to why you're creating that safe space. Because your why then is inclusive as to how you're going to approach that. And when you find yourself not being able to do that, you'll go back to why I created this safe space. Why is this important? I think it's also important to think about yourself. All of us have needed safety. All of us have needed someone to talk to. All of us have needed just a shoulder to lean on. And even if the safe space is a space where there's silence, to know that other people that are in that space with you, that to me, it just speaks volumes, because here, I would say in today's society, it's been really difficult to find and to create safety. And safety is, again, what transforms the work. It transforms the world. It transforms hearts. And it also transforms and transcends love. And so I think that that would be my message to people. Beautiful. Who are in the process of creating safe space.
Thank you. And one thing that you mentioned that I think really something I need to work on more, which is that it's okay to have, or possibly even prefer to have, silence in a safe space. And I think too often, I'll speak for myself, you know, as a CEO or many executives, very solution oriented type people, too much so.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best thing is actually not to provide the solution, not to do that, but just to have silence and just to listen. And that's oftentimes the thing that people frankly need the most. So I'm glad you hit on that.
Yeah. And I'm also glad that as a leader that you were able to even speak to that, that that's something that you want to be more aware of, because the reality of it is that, you know, we all want to help. We all want to be supportive. And what I'm realizing is that sometimes in silence is where you actually are able to find what you need the most. And just knowing that you can look across the room and know that somebody else is also doing that same thing, I think it makes it easier to know that you're not just, even though you're experiencing silence, you're not doing that, you're not experiencing the suffering alone, because you have somebody that's there in community with you. And, you know, energy, we can feel energy. So
yes, I think, yes.
So that to me has been really helpful to know.
You know, harder to feel energy by Zoom, but we can still feel Zoom energy, but in-person energy is really something critical and important. Okay, let's talk about, you mentioned safe spaces. I know Meetup has been that. It's to some extent, your story on Meetup is really, it was very motivational to me. I really want to share that with you in terms of helping, in terms of writing the book, in terms of a support system for coming out. Let's talk maybe a little bit about your experience with the Meetup, whether you want to talk broadly or you want to hit on the group Shut Up and Write, however you want to take it is great.
When I first met Meetup, was like, I felt like I was first meeting myself, because I was in the process of coming out. I had just moved to Oakland, and I was like, you know what? I came to San Francisco a couple years prior to that. And when I came to San Francisco, it was my first time experiencing the queer community in ways that I had never experienced it. And it was in that I felt
specifically so accepted and so embraced, or something different.
I was so shocked, because I was also coming from a religious community. And so the first thing that people said when I was coming to San Francisco was, don't come back gay. And so when I came to San Francisco, I was like, the problem is I already am. But I did not make any steps to necessarily find community, because I was really nervous. And I remember people kept saying, Amani, you should check out Meetup. Go check out Meetup. You know, you might find some stuff to do. And I ended up looking up on Meetup, and I saw that they had a speed dating. And it was something that I had always wanted to do. But again, could not see myself in that space, because I'm somebody that likes women. And usually it was about the opposite sex. So when I saw that Dr. Frankie had a speed dating event on Meetup, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this out. I was a little nervous, but I went out. David, I went out like it was a date. I went out and got a shirt. I went out and got a bow tie. And I ended up going to this group. And it was the first time that I had felt seen in a really long time.
Wow.
In a way of me being able to be gay. So that was my first introduction to Meetup, and I was sold then, because I recognized that it wasn't just a space for people that were just wanting to just do and find activities. It was really being a safe space for people who were not traditionally included in events. And so I even went.
We always say find your people, your people on Meetup, and it's true, because too often people think that there's no one like them.
Exactly.
Who else grew up in foster care? Who else had the challenges? Who else, is also in the process of coming out? But you know what? There's a lot of people that can share one story, and there's a lot of comfort actually in that. Please continue.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I definitely agree with that. And that's what I felt on the site, which made me come back for more. And then it turned into me going to queer game nights. And then I ended up moving to Sacramento, and I then got to go on a boat trip, and that was really cool. So there was just a lot of activities that I got to find.
Amazing.
Yes. And I think the other thing that I want to say about Meetup, that which I think is really crucial and important, especially because I said being here in Tulsa, sometimes all these events are happening all at the same time, but you also just don't know. And with Meetup, you can at least see what's happening, not just months in advance, but weeks in advance, and you can plan things. And so I even have done like the speaking classes that they have on Meetup. And I still do that from time to time being here, because it's virtual. That's the beauty of also Meetup, is that things have been virtual.
Yeah.
But then after losing my little sister to suicide, I found myself feeling really isolated. I couldn't get out of bed, David. I couldn't do anything. It was really, really, really hard. And I remember my supervisor, she said, you know, Amani, she thought that it would be really important for me to find a grief group. And I did go to a grief group, and it was there that, again, I couldn't really see myself. I couldn't really relate to what other people were experiencing. I think that losing someone to suicide is a very different kind of grief that you experience. And so I was really thankful to be in space of people who are grieving, but I also found myself needing more. And another thing that she said was, I really think that you should find a group, you know, to find a support group. Think about, you know, what you want to do. And I was also in the midst of writing a book. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to go back to Meetup. So I went on Meetup and I went to the search bar and I just put writing in, and Shut Up and Write came up. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is wild. Okay.
And so, for people who don't know, Shut Up and Write is one of our most successful writing groups on Meetup Pro, dozens and dozens of groups in different cities. It's really an exceptional opportunity for people who are interested in having a support group to help to write. So please continue.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that support group is more than just writing for you.
It was, because it was there that I was able to meet people. And in meeting people, they were able to see me. I was able to see them. We were in our different journeys of writing. And people, there were some people who were writing books. There were people who were just writing for pleasure. And there were people who were just coming just because they wanted to be surrounded around community. And it was there that I met a best friend. It was there that I met a mother-like figure. And we ended up writing our own books. And it was just a beautiful experience. And I just remember knowing that I was going to set myself on a schedule, because they, you know, I would do it on Tuesday and then I would do it on the weekend. So it was either Saturday or Sunday. And so I knew that in my schedule, that was something I was going to be doing on a weekly basis. And there were times that I was not able to get there, but the times that I did, it was very powerful, because it was also my first time writing a book. And so I did not have, I had a solid community within the New Degree Press community. But outside of that, when you're writing a book, you know, you're sort of doing that kind of alone, because I wasn't just writing a book. I was writing a memoir. I was writing a memoir of my life. I was having to process such deep and hard emotions. And to be able to do that in a community of people felt really solid, to be quite honest.
You know, I want to get to You Are the Prize, which is your amazing book. But before, I want to just say something about you, which is something that I find pretty remarkable. Is you're a very independent-minded person. You think differently, you do differently, and it's great. But you also seem to be comfortable asking for advice and listening to others. You know, your story, it weaves through, this person told me to do this, so I did it. This person told me to do that, so I did it. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are so independently-minded that they don't believe in listening to anyone. But I think it's, I don't know if it's unique or not, but your ability to both be incredibly independent, but also kind of get the advice of others, it seems like has led you down some good paths.
For sure. You know, I will say that I was blessed very, very early with community, and knowing that the importance of community is how you thrive has been something that I've known and have been able to experience. And the importance of interdependence, knowing that we can lean on each other for support. And that is something that I think that many of us are learning. Many of us have not been able to experience or witness or see.
People fear it. They fear interdependence because there's a vulnerability that goes with that. That oftentimes people are reluctant to do because they don't want to get hurt often.
Yes, for sure. And I think that in some ways, in my experience, being able to understand pain at such a young age allowed me to navigate through it, you know, and not really adapt to it, but to be able to adapt to the surroundings that I'm in and to be able to thrive in those ways. So I feel like pain has given me insight into the things that I also don't want to experience. And there are times where sometimes, you know, they say, you know, don't put your hand on a hot stove. And sometimes we do it because we want to, you know, see for ourselves. And I have been that person. Mm. And I have also learned that it's also okay to learn and hear from other person's wisdom, because it also may allow you to experience something on the other side. And so that's how I try to live my life, honestly.
Beautiful. You know, the other observation I would say is you have a particularly strong sense of self. And I think through the challenges and through the successes, you know yourself. And when you know yourself, it's a lot easier to navigate life than when you just don't. There are so many people out there that could be in not just their 20s when it's people trying to figure out who they are, but in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, they still don't know kind of who they are. It's very hard to navigate a world like that.
Yeah, it is. It is.
You are the prize. Yes. I love that name for the book.
Thank you.
Of your book. Talk about why'd you choose that name? What does that name mean? What does that name really mean to you? How'd you choose it?
I cannot believe that I'm holding the actual book, though.
Woohoo!
It's so interesting to go from a writing group to writing a manuscript, and it's all on Google Docs, and then all of a sudden you have like the actual book in your hand. And so
it's an amazing feeling. I have a book that came out a year ago, so I know that. I know the feeling. First time I walked into a Barnes & Noble and I saw my book, I started crying.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is exciting.
Yeah, to you too. So talk about You Are the Prize.
So You Are the Prize is a memoir. The title actually came from my little sister. And she said to me one day, she said, "Sis, always remember that you are the prize." And when she said that to me, it was actually when I was going through my coming out experience. And I remember experiencing sort of like my first heartbreak. And she said to me, she said, "Sis, you have to always remember that you are the prize." And she was really my hype man. She was my cheerleader. She was my confidence booster. She was all of those things. And I was like, you know, what better way to honor her life and her legacy by naming the book after something that she has told me? Because even though I experienced the loss of her, I experienced the loss of her when I actually went into the foster care system, you know? And so to have that piece of her to be like, you know what, you are the prize. I was thinking about my own life journey and throughout my life, how that was something that I didn't get to experience. I didn't get to experience myself as the prize. And so when I thought back to my writing process and to thinking back on my stories and the things that I've experienced, I said, you know what? Life may have told me that I was born in shambles, have been born through all of these different adversities. But what it has ignored to also share with me is that I was also born whole. And when you're born whole, everyone is born whole. You know, that's a prize within itself. Mm. And so for me, I had to recognize that even though I experienced really difficult and hard things, that at the core of it, I am still the prize. And that's really something that I wanted to share in my book with other young people, because when you're being taken away, when you're being removed,
self-worth,
you lose your self-worth, you lose your sense of self. And there's a lot of confusion because you begin to blame yourself because the adults in your life are not explaining to you why it is you are in the position that you're in. And they don't take that time to also say to you, it's not your fault. And so with that, you take on all of that blame and you begin to realize that, you know what, I'm a burden. I don't know why I belong here. And so for me, it was just really me coming back to myself. And I'm not saying that it's perfect, but it's to say that I remind myself every day that I am the prize. And also this book holds me accountable because yes. When people see me, they say, you know, Imani, you are the prize.
So you've gotten some feedback about the book so far. What kind of things have you been hearing from people? How meaningful is that?
I will say that it was definitely really difficult getting the book out. I was really nervous. I had a lot of imposter syndrome around it. I wasn't sure if it was going to be good. I wasn't sure if I had been too vulnerable, all of those things. And I remember my cousin. I was really nervous about my family. That was really what I was first nervous about. And to get feedback from my family has been amazing. For them to be able to acknowledge what I experienced, to be able to acknowledge how far that I've come, to be able to also acknowledge the lineage that I came from, you know, the strong lineage that I came from, was super, super impactful. To hear it from professors, to hear it from teachers, to hear it from people who've also lived through foster care come up to me and say, wow, Amani, like your story is amazing. Like this has been beautifully written. I actually saw my hardcover for the very first time. Dr. Nichols from the American Pediatrics Association moderated a panel that I was on last week, and he actually bought my hardcover, and it was the first time that I had ever seen the hardcover. And just like you, when you saw your book at Barnes & Noble's, I just felt this overwhelming feeling come up inside of me, because it was like, wow, not only is my book just being released to people who need it and who want to see it thrive, but to have someone like Dr. Nichols holding my book just felt really, really amazing.
It's amazing. And you know how many people are going to read it, how many people are going to be impacted by it. When did the book come out, by the way?
Oh, the book came out in January of 2022.
You Are the Prize is obviously one action that people could take to learn more about the foster care system. And I urge all of our listeners to do that. Any other last suggestions you would give for our listeners just to assist or learn more about foster care? It's a black box for many people. And is there anything that we can or should be doing?
Yeah, thank you. So May is National Foster Care Month. So it's a month where it's really around education and advocacy and bringing to light the experiences, the challenges, and also the wins that we've experienced with moving child welfare policy forward. And so I would say that, you know, in your local communities, it's important to, you know, to do your homework and to do your research and to learn more. And the thing about it is that many people say, oh, I can't foster, I can't adopt, I can't do any of those things. And those are the things that I would also urge you to also think through and say, if you can't do it, that's okay. But you can also learn about it. You can think about even just some meetup groups that incorporate young people that are in the foster care system, or those that are aging out, or those that have been transitioned out, because we are a population that gets looked over and that gets silenced. And so a lot of times it's hard for us to find community within those communities. And so I just think it's important just to be aware and bring awareness. Would love for people to check out my books. I think that it's a really good resource, and it brings a really good understanding for somebody who doesn't know what the child welfare system is like. For you then to just pass that on to another young person or to an agency or to an organization. My book is currently at 4 universities, and I would like to get my book out into more spaces, you know, in the world, because I think that there's a lot of work that still needs to be done around this system. We can't do it alone.
And I think everyone gains from those stories. It's not just people. And foster care, I think all children, all adults can gain from that, from the messages that are in the book around community, around safe spaces, et cetera. Okay.
Yes.
I did tell our listeners that they would be motivated. And I know I have, as listener number one. Rapid fire questions, rapid fire quick answers. Here we go. First time you saw yourself as a leader?
When I was introducing First Lady Michelle Obama at the White House. In front of not just staff, but in front of a generation of kids.
How nervous were you? My gosh.
I was extremely nervous. But I had to meet her beforehand, right before I went on, and it helped ease off a lot of the nerves.
And so, I'm sure she was incredible.
Super incredible. Yeah. One of the best days of my life.
Wow. Wow. If you could go access a time machine and go anywhere in the world at any point in time, where and when do you think you would go?
I would say that I would go to heaven.
Wow.
To connect with my little sister and to connect with my great aunt, to be able to see them again, to hear them again, to get some perspective from them, and to be able to hug on them so that I can continue to hug on the world.
Beautiful. Beautiful. No one has ever given that. It's what a beautiful answer. Name one thing on your bucket list that you have not done and you still would love to be able to do.
I really, really want to go to Bali, and I have not been able to do that just yet.
It is as beautiful as people say. That's what I will tell you. Last question, which is, how do you most want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered for my hugs, the way that I embrace people. I hear that I give really good hugs, and part of that is because I've been able to receive really, really good hugs. And so I want people to remember the impact that I've been able to make on their life. And by doing so, it's been with the hugs and the words of encouragement and support that I've given them.
Okay. So if I get to head out to Tulsa, Oklahoma, will I get a big hug?
You will get a big hug. You will.
I would love that. Thank you. Thank you, Beyond, for being who you are. Thank you for being the prize. Thank you for helping everyone and our listeners to understand that every person, every single person is a prize. There's this concept that I've read about once, which is if you save one person, you save the world. Mm. And I think you really represent that in terms of the number of people that you're helping and people that you're saving. And I just wanted to thank you for being such a loyal Meetup member. And most importantly, thank you for being such a loyal member of the human race. And we just really appreciate you being on Keep Connected. Thank you.
Thank you so much, David, for having me. I really appreciate you. Keep changing the world.
Thanks for listening to today's extremely special episode. You are the prize. Every listener is the prize. There's so many important messages throughout this episode that I hope that every person here is able to internalize. Her focus on the importance of interdependency, on creating safe spaces, on people understanding their greatness, and people remembering where they came from, and so many other key messages. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please subscribe, leave a review, and remember, let's keep connected, because life is better together. David Siegel here, your favorite podcast host. I have something important to share. Check out my new book, Decide and Conquer, to really get to know my story at Meetup. You know, the hardest thing about community leadership is making tough decisions when the stakes are high. And I'll tell you, they were never higher than when Meetup was owned and sold by WeWork. In my new book, Decide and Conquer, I'll walk you through a counterintuitive framework for decision-making and the epic journey of Meetup's surprising survival. Good leaders deliberate, great leaders decide. Order my book today by visiting decideandconquerbook.com or anywhere books are sold. Think you'll like it.